Thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and welcome again on behalf of everybody at Copyright Clearance Center. I want to kind of set the stage a bit and think about those two words, copyright and commerce. They make an intriguing pair, and maybe not such an obvious one. Copyright is about intellectual property. It's about inspiration and creativity. Commerce, well, it's all about getting down to business, counting up the beans, calculating the return on investment. And of course, more than ever, they intersect in our time. Increasingly, the creative economy dominates and dictates the direction of our nation's fortune. I want to turn now to Cecilia Kang. Cecilia, welcome.
Thank you.
We should tell people you are the technology policy reporter for the Washington Post and write about the intersection of technology and Washington. You also blog at Post Tech. Cecilia Kang came to the Post in 2006 after covering technology and demographics for the San Jose Mercury News, where she followed the dot-com world of Silicon Valley from boom to bust. And you know, I thought briefly about the dot-com boom and one of those phrases from that time, content is king. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of gotten a little bit worn at the edges at the moment. But the relationship between some of the major technology companies that we think of, the Googles, the Amazons, Apples, and so forth, and content itself is really critical, I think. Their business models require content of the kinds of works that are produced by photographers, writers, all sorts of people. Isn't that so?
That's right. And and there is the same tensions that existed from when I was covering this back at the in the late 90s and early 2000s. Back then, though, the distributors were cable and movie houses, and now it's Facebook, Google, Apple, and Amazon. The players have changed and the methods have changed a little bit, but it's still the same tension inherently between those who create the content and those who distribute it. And that sort of brings us to where we are today, which is sort of the big questions circulating around Washington on how to protect intellectual property given the new gateways that consumers are using to access that content, ensuring that there aren't big losses for the content creators and not just content, but those who create intellectual property at large. So these are some of the biggest debates that are having a lot more voice and getting a lot more of a bigger audience in the last few months, frankly, than they have in really years.
Well, and these issues, of course, have a lot of competition for airtime, given the situation on the Hill and just nationally. Our economy is a concern. Jobs are a concern. We have an election year coming up, and just less than a month will begin. How much attention is all of this getting, considering that kind of competition?
Well, it certainly is getting a lot of attention. On the Hill, there are right now two bills circulating, one in the House and one in the Senate, and another House bill that will be introduced later this week, probably as soon as tomorrow. They all try to achieve the same goal, which is to protect intellectual property, anti-piracy, and anti-counterfeiting. And you're also seeing federal law enforcement step up their efforts to stop the illegal trade of copyrighted and protected material and goods. So there is definitely more attention. I think since the administration came in, there's just been a general, there's an IP czar that was appointed. There's more interest. That's helped those who have tried to fight for anti-piracy bills, such as the Motion Picture Association, the songwriters, record labels, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, to push for legislation and proposals. But getting there and actually finding out solutions that will get agreement from lots of different parties, and so many more parties have stepped up to voice opposition or support for the different bills, it's going to be a lot harder than I think a lot of people thought.
Well, let's talk about that just a bit. And one of the things I thought was interesting, there is this third bill. There is SOPA, there's PIPA, and there's this new one called OPEN.
That's right.
And I like that acronym. But what I found intriguing was it hasn't even been introduced yet. It's been talked about, but yet not really published. But they have a website, and they're getting public input on that website. And I found that fascinating, that this was really an issue to get to the earlier question about how important this is, how much airtime is it getting. When the public is contributing on a website about this, something's going on.
Absolutely. I think it's hard to get the public interest, consumer groups, really jazzed up about a policy issue when it comes to technology and and this whole space. But this one has. This is sort of the big one these days that has anti-piracy that has really brought voices from consumer group communities and the public interest. And I think that there's a lot of empathy for both sides of, yes, we need to protect content, but how can we get there in a way that where the right people are liable for when there is illegal trade of copyright and protected content. And those are the big questions. And then you have very powerful companies that normally don't care, as Victor said. They have sort of this libertarian view from Silicon Valley. We actually don't really care about a lot of issues as long as you don't infringe on us. And their fear is that some of these proposals, specifically the Stop Online Piracy Act in the House, and to an extent the Protect Intellectual Property Act in the Senate, would make them liable, that they would not have the same safe harbors that the Digital Millennium Copyright Act affords them. But the DMCA has been, and the safe harbors that it affords some of these websites, is exactly what a lot of those in Hollywood, a lot of those in the record industry, a lot of those in the photography industry, in the news industry will say has done nothing to really change or move the needle, that they're still seeing a lot of their content being distributed illegally and no money going to the right places. So there's this problem that everybody agrees that what's working now is not really working, but how to get to a place where there's real protection and legislation that puts the liability in the right places, on the right people, and the right companies, is the real question. So again, there's an agreement that piracy is bad, and there's an agreement that maybe some of the worst, the most nefarious or the worst perpetrators are the foreign rogue websites. But how do you protect, to make sure that that content doesn't go to those websites when the internet is really borderless in some ways and the same search engines, the same social networks are providing content in the same way, are using content in the same way that these foreign websites are as well, potentially? And how do you define terms like dedicated, sites that are dedicated to piracy? There's a lot of blurring of language that gets these Silicon Valley companies, frankly, a little freaked out.
Well, it also gets the users freaked out. And I think it's because the importance of these companies is just growing in our lives. I mean, so many people of any age would feel lost without Facebook, without Google, without their Apple iPhone, without their Amazon Kindle, and so forth. And the questions go well beyond intellectual property.
Yes.
We start talking about antitrust. We start talking about privacy concerns. It makes it fascinating, and it really makes it a kind of inclusive subject for the lives of everybody in this country.
Certainly. And I think a lot of people can relate to this. Normal people can relate to this very complicated, wonky issue that's being debated on the Hill, with the particulars being very, very, again, wonky and specific and technologically specific, because it cuts across so many larger issues. Freedom of expression is evoked, this idea that it cuts across First Amendment rights. Again, privacy. And this later argument that's being espoused by some consumer groups and Silicon Valley companies, this idea that the internet can be broken if certain legislation goes through. And, you know, these are big proclamations that aren't necessarily defined very well, but are being evoked in these larger debates.
Well, they make great bumper stickers. They make great hashtags on Twitter. I want to look at one particularly that was just recently addressed by the FTC, and that was some privacy complaints against Facebook. Mm-hmm. And there was a quote from John Leibowitz, who's the chairman of the FTC, that I thought was intriguing. It was in your report. He said when they determined that or settled these various violations, and you can tell us about the particulars there, but John Leibowitz said, Facebook is obligated to keep the promises about privacy that it makes to hundreds of millions of users. Facebook's innovation does not have to come at the expense of consumer privacy. The FTC action will ensure it will not. And I think that's an interesting quote. I mean, the idea that innovation, which drives so much of Silicon Valley, seems to run rampant not only with people's privacy, but sometimes over their intellectual property and so forth. And maybe you can tell us more about that decision.
Sure. And I think that goes back to what I was trying to say earlier about when I say Silicon Valley doesn't care about these issues in Washington. They do. I think a lot of the companies do care about many of the issues here. But there is a view also in Silicon Valley that that there's that these companies, the companies that they're creating every day, are really creating very new, innovative products that and services that can that are distinguishing the country globally and our economy, that are distinguished, that are really changing the way consumers behave. They're providing a service, and people there are very focused on technology. And so, when I say that Silicon Valley doesn't care, what it is Silicon Valley cares very much about engineering and innovation and the next new thing. And a lot of the issues, unless it really infringes on their ability to continue doing that, that's when you hear people piping up. That's why it's interesting that big web companies, tech firms alike, have become so vocally against some of these legislative proposals. So when it comes to Washington, though, and how this relates to consumers, the concern that Chairman Leibovitz is really addressing is that, okay, we get that. That is very important. It is important for our economy to have these new innovations. But what about the basic rights of consumers to feel that they're getting upfront truth when a company says that we're going to do certain things with your information, that we are providing you content that is legal or not. These basic truths and protection of consumers is what Washington regulators right now are trying to grapple with and trying to understand if these web companies are keeping that as high on the priority list as the next string of codes that are going to produce the new Facebook service.
With regard to the Hill itself, how do these questions divide people on the Hill? It's not purely a question of Democrat, Republican, blue state, red state. Even within single states, there's divisions. Can you
tell us about
this?
It's definitely bipartisan, this issue. And it should be noted that both of these bills, particularly the one in the Senate, has a lot of support. I think there's 40 co-signers. The one in the House, SOPA, right now has something like 20 co-signers, 25. So there, and it's bipartisan, for sure. And in fact, the newest bill that will come out this week, OPEN, is a bipartisan co-authored bill from Representative Ron Wyden and Dara Issa, both from, one from California, one from Oregon.
Right.
And what you see is there is not not to put too much of a fine point on it. You do see some pushback from lawmakers from Northern California that represent some of the web companies. But, you know, not to put too much of a fine point on it, these are bills that are generally fairly well supported. As to whether they will go through, particularly by the end of this session, which is we're running out of time, and going into 2012 with an election year, it really is, I think there are big questions as to what will, in fact, really turn out to be a true law from any of these. And I think also this third bill that's coming up is sort of a curveball, the idea of the liability or the responsibility lying on an international organization, the International Trade Commission, and instead of taking down domain names, the idea is to remove links on sites to try to counter piracy. So that's sort of a curveball that it introduces a whole new idea and solution. But there is interest. It started and has tremendous backing, these legislative pushes from many companies. The U.S. Chamber has been a big proponent of both the Senate and the House bills. And just now, only in the last month or so, have you seen Silicon Valley really come out and voice opposition to the particulars of these bills, but really light a fire. And you're getting venture capitalists come out, and they've formed these coalitions with public interest groups. So it'll be interesting to see how much that actually has an effect on putting the brakes on any of this.
Well, it's getting some people's attention. I read that Nancy Pelosi, who's a Northern California lawmaker, has tweeted about SOPA in the negative, and yet the bill is co-written, I guess, by John Conyers, who is a ranking member in the Judiciary Committee.
That's right.
So these are people even within the Democratic Party who see things quite differently.
That's right. And I think also the trouble with getting these passed is that they're technical. These are technical bills that require a lot of thought on what sort of the greater implications are. What does it mean to take down a domain name? You know, those who are against the bill would say that disrupts the whole architecture of the internet. It makes it very difficult to find websites. it puts a lot of burden on domain name services as well as, you know, search companies, et cetera. What does it mean for a third party transaction company to be associated and potentially liable? Credit card companies, when they hear that, that raises a lot of, you know, alarm bells to them. Does it mean that Visa, MasterCard could be responsible in some way? And what would the liability be? So there's lots of big questions and a lot of the technicals, and the devil is in the detail always on these things. So there's...
And the impact on the economy, that must certainly come up as well, whether this is not simply a matter of a cost to an individual company, but a cost to the economy at large if things aren't done in a balanced way, for example.
Sure. And you hear that argument over and over again, and it's a very compelling one. When you hear the Chamber of Commerce say that $165 billion in revenues lost from pirated copy every year, that's a big figure in an economy like this, in such a stubborn downturn. With jobs the way they are, and you have folks who are testifying on the Hill who are the concession stand, you know, vendors to the unions and janitors, and the ripple effect when Hollywood's hurting and, you know, publications are hurting, and what that means for the economy at large. It's an important question for the federal government right now.
Well, we will follow it all on your blog, Cecilia Kang, who is the technology policy reporter for The Washington Post and blogs at Post Tech. Thank you very much indeed. And join us, if you will, at the Kernikan Center for Law, Media, and the Arts in New York City on Friday, March 30th, 2012, when Copyright Clearance Center presents its third biannual forum on Copyright 2012, Advancing the Creative Economy. This day-long event will focus on the health and future of the global creative economy in a time of changing technology. CCC plans to bring together thought leaders, creators, and policymakers for presentations and panel discussions about the vital roles of copyright and creativity in the progress of knowledge. Portions of that event, coming up again at the Kernikan Center for Law, Media, and the Arts in New York on Friday, March 30th, will be webcast live. But we hope if you're in the area, you can make it. To learn more or to register, please go to oncopyright2012.com. And remember to follow Copyright Clearance Center on Twitter and on Facebook. Again, thank you all very much for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you back again very soon.